Hello, everybody. This is Flaherty's on Films. This week we're talking about Fight Club.
Hit the music.
Everybody, this is Flaherty's on Films.
I'm Colleen Flaherty.
And I'm Michael Flaherty. And this is Flaherty's on Films. Again, I think we said that three times now. This is a podcast about...
You gave up on that voice right quick.
This is a podcast. It's like a spooky ghost sort of voice.
You're like a spooky Backstreet Boy, like, this is how we do it.
You carried that home. Sorry. Thanks. No, it was all going somewhere now because of that great ending. Here's a description of this movie we're about to talk about.
The film Fight Club. On this podcast, we're talking about movies.
This is a podcast. An insomniac office worker and a devil may care soap maker form an underground fight club that evolves into something much, much more.
That movie sounds way more fun than the movie I watched.
I mean, that is what happens.
It is. It's just the tone of it. And I will say this film was recommended for our Improved AFI by Mitch Brown. And here's what he had to say about it just briefly. He said, Fight Club is a commentary on many fascinating sociological concepts. Get into that later. Including toxic masculinity, rather than being a celebration of it, like its Fox marketing implies. Which is, that'll be some good discussion. If I had prepared, I would have brought Mitch on the podcast, but I didn't do that. That's not really my jam. Michael, have you seen Fight Club before? What'd you think of it on this latest viewing?
I have seen it before. I don't really remember what I thought of it before. I thought like, pretty cool movie. I liked it when I was in high school. On this recent viewing, I thought, interesting. There's a lot going on. I guess we'll go into it now. My overall feelings about its themes, about okay, it's like this. I think the people who made the movie think Brad Pitt is obviously the bad guy. But boy, do they make him look like the good guy and the cool guy. And because of the film's twist, which we'll talk about a lot later, I'm sure, the fact that Brad Pitt is bad is really not delved into. Like, it really has to go up to the viewer to walk away with that impression.
Right. So before we were on the air, Michael and I were talking about, there's a YouTube video by Folding Ideas where they talk about how this movie's actually about toxic masculinity, which Mitch also said. And I do see that. Like, I guess it's there, but it's very much in keeping with the idea of like the film American History X, or how a bunch of skinheads watch and everyone, they were just so cool and like awesome and macho that they didn't really get the point of the movie. But like Fight Club is actually kind of worse for that because, you know, I liked it when I saw it in high school, but I remember thinking Brad Pitt was pretty cool and just got it about society, man. Right. I mean, I don't feel like they did a very good job of parodying toxic masculinity.
I feel like if we really want to know about society, we're going to go to our first segment. Bam.
Time for Sam. Michael did not want to know what I felt about this movie, but he is too bad. I'm going to tell you later.
Yeah, because I feel like we're just going to go over this a lot later.
Oh, yeah. I got things to say, but Sam is so much cooler than me. So let's hear what she has to say.
Do you guys know what I forgot to ask you before we started recording?
What's that? What?
How do you pronounce the author's last name?
I don't know.
Palachuk?
Palachuk? There's an N in there. Palahniuk. Palahniuk? Palahniuk?
Okay. Greg.
You know what? Greg it is. Fight Club was based on the 1996 novel by the same name. Chuck Craig was camping one day when he got in a fight with the people at the Knicks campsite. Apparently, he didn't like the music on their radio, told them to turn it down, and fists flew.
Whoa.
Then he looked at his own fist of like, wait a minute, Fight Club. That's it.
This just in on Chuck's Twitter. He says it's pronounced Paula Nick.
Oh.
Polonick. Okay. The next day at work, Polonick, who was supporting several obvious injuries from the fight, noticed that none of his coworkers were commenting on them. According to Polonick, quote, people didn't ask me what had happened. I think they were afraid of the answer. I realized that if you looked bad enough, people would not want to know what you did in your spare time. They don't want to know the bad things about you. And the key was to look so bad that no one would ever, ever ask. And that was the idea behind Fight Club.
This is so rude to Mr. Polonick, who obviously listens to our podcast. But he is a total skinny nerd. Like,
oh, yeah. No, when I saw a photo of him, I was not expecting that.
He's
yeah,
an Edward Norton type.
He's like a nerdier Edward Norton.
It sounds impossible.
I know. Like, if that guy came to my office and he was cut up in the face, I'd be like, "Oh, are you okay?" He doesn't seem like an intimidating sort. But go on.
Originally, when writing, Polonick wrote the two characters as separate people. However, about two-thirds of the way through the book, he noticed how the two acted together as one person and decided that that was how the story needed to end.
Controversial. I think the twist is real neat. I think they do it pretty well.
Heck yeah, I agree.
So, to cast the two versions of the narrator, the studio turned to Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt, by the way, got paid a lot more than Edward Norton.
Sure.
And they originally wanted Russell Crowe as his part. Just
for Brad Pitt's part?
Mm-hmm.
Because he likes to fight a lot.
Yeah, I think they wanted like someone like tough, but then they're like, let's go sexy. I guess, I don't know.
Cool choices made all around.
So Norton had just played a skinhead neo-Nazi in American History X, and he had beefed up for the role. So for this role, he had to lose 20 pounds. According to Norton, quote, we decided together that I was going to get very thin. It's almost a junkie metaphor. This guy is an unreliable narrator in the sense that he's saying, you've been carved out of wood and you felt powerful. And yet his body's disintegrating. Wow. And he's bruised and shattered. And Brad made the decision to go the opposite way because Tyler is the way my character sees himself. Brad got progressively bigger throughout the movie. He bulked up and got huge and tan and beautiful while I became Gollum.
Mm. Cool. Mm-hmm. To prepare- if anyone's wondering why Sam went pounds, it's because she was lifting up her cat. It wasn't a verbal tick or anything. Don't worry about Sam.
I would just like it noted I did shut the door to keep the cat out and she bursted through. She's basically Brad Pitt right now. Okay.
Basically. Because he's so good at opening doors, but you wouldn't expect it.
To prepare for their roles, Norton and Pitt both took soap making classes and basic boxing, taekwondo, and grappling lessons. Pitt also had pieces of his front teeth chipped off for the role.
What? Ugh. Why? Ugh. Isn't that painful?
Was soap making integral to their performance?
Was the teeth thing? I'm on the teeth thing still.
I mean, the teeth thing is weirder. Yeah, fair.
One of the articles I read about it was like, because he knew he could afford to get it fixed. And I was like, okay.
All right.
Another person to think creatively about their character's role was Helena Bonham Carter. Bonham Carter insisted that her makeup artist use her left hand when applying her eye makeup. Bonham Carter believed Marla wasn't the type of person to be skilled or even care about correctly applying their makeup.
That's funny.
Another famous face in this movie is Meatloaf. To get his body to accurately sag.
Oh, that's Meatloaf.
Yeah. He plays Bob, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robert Paulson.
Oh, yeah.
He had to wear a fat suit that was filled with 100 pounds of bird seed. That's how they could get it sagged. They actually made two suits, one with nipples and one without, because they weren't convinced that the studio would let them do the nipple one.
Did they?
Yeah.
Cool.
I didn't notice.
The suit was so heavy that Meatloaf needed to take oxygen after each take. Yeah. Apparently, after filming wrapped, he sent a giant picture of Edward Norton's face sandwiched into his chest to Edward Norton, and it said, like, happy hugs, love meat.
Cute.
That's also why Bob is the only person who violates the Fight Club sixth rule, no shirts, no shoes, because he was obviously wearing a fat suit that did not look like skin, so he had to keep his shirt on.
Fair enough.
Sure. I did not bump on that.
That it was Meatloaf? Or
no, I didn't bump on that he was wearing a shirt, even though it was a rule to have no shirts. Oh. But everyone was just like, cool with it. No one needed to talk about it.
So you may think that the first time we meet Tyler is on the plane, but actually Brad Pitt is in five scenes before we first actually meet him. Did you guys catch it?
Yes, I do.
You
know.
Did?
Well, I just know this fact beforehand.
He's near the photocopier at the narrator's job when he's kind of falling asleep. He's in the hallway outside the doctor's office.
So these are instances where Brad Pitt like pops in for a frame in his uniform. Yeah.
Yep. He's at the testicular cancer support group meeting, and he's behind the narrator when he sees Marla leaving the meeting. And he is also the waiter in the far right of the presentation video of the hotel.
That's a cool one. That's a cool one.
That's neat.
That one actually was, yeah, fun. I got to see that one. It was cool. So there was two big things that had to be taken out of this film to get the studio approval. So the first one is after Marla has sex with Tyler, in the book, she says, oh, Tyler, I want your abortion. The studio executives did not like it. The director agreed to change it on the condition that he would only change it once.
Once
it was changed, that's it.
Oh, so that's when she changed it to, I haven't been fucked like that since grade school?
Yes. The executive begged him to swap it back to the original line, but he refused.
Perfect. Love that.
The other one that did get taken out is Angel Face. Is that the name of the character?
Is this Jared Leto we're talking about?
Yes, Jared Leto. At one point, he gets punched really hard in the nose, and they created for him like this face makeup prosthetics that showed his nose being ripped in half and like blood and guts bubbling up. And apparently, it was so graphic, they decided that it couldn't be in the film. But on top of it, Jared Leto said, like, as he was walking around that day, like, people refused to, like, kind of look at him.
Oh, because like the author.
Because it just made people so uncomfortable.
I kind of see that about Jared Leto.
Yeah,
as a person,
I hear that's a thing of his.
So, this movie has a famous incident that happened before it was released in theaters. Rosie O'Donnell actually saw the movie before it was released, and she went on her talk show and told everyone the ending to the film urged all of her viewers to avoid the movie.
Rosie.
Brad Pitt
called... What was
called
her objection to it?
She was just thought it was inappropriate and sexual and whatnot.
Well, it is just both bad. Those things. Yeah.
She said that it made her unable to sleep ever since she saw it. I don't know. But Brad Pitt has said that her actions were unforgivable.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Yeah. Brad Pitt also tried to convince his parents not to watch it, but they did anyway, and then they stopped after the chemical burn scene.
Nice. Sure.
The movie had a budget of $63 million. It started off at like only $24 million, but then once they got Brad Pitt, that price went way up.
Yeah, sure.
At the box office, it would make $100.9 million. Fight Club was nominated for one Academy Award. It was nominated for Best Sound Editing, and it would lose to another film that we have watched on this new list, The Matrix.
Fair.
Unlike other novel turned into movies that we've seen in the past, this one, the author actually thought that the film made the story better.
Nice.
So It's a fun thing.
Sounds like original story was just like, yeah, fighting. Like, there was no real depth to it at all. Sounds like.
I haven't read the book, so I can't actually tell you. Also, both David Fincher, so the director, and Edward Norton have compared this movie to The Graduate, which I thought was interesting and thought you guys might have some thoughts on since you
What's the comparison?
David Fincher quote is, "The Graduate is a good parallel. It was talking about that moment in time when you have this world of possibilities, all these expectations, and you don't know who it is you're supposed to be, and you choose one path. Mrs. Robinson, it turns out to be bleak, but it's part of your initiation, your trial by fire, and then by choosing the wrong path, you find your way to the right path, but you've created this mess. Fight Club is the 90s inverse of that."
That's dumb.
How is it
a guy
inverse?
Who does not have a world of possibilities in front of him? He had no possibilities. He literally cannot imagine a way to change his life.
That's dumb.
I don't like
that. That's like The Godfather and Frozen are like the same film because, you know, it's just about family and expectations, you know? But Frozen really turns it on its head, you know, in sort of a modern way. Like, that's just any film.
Yeah, David.
Are you saying that David Fincher is pretentious?
Perhaps. I like David Fincher films.
Which ones do you like? What's your favorite David Fincher film?
I like Seven.
I like Zodiac.
I never saw Zodiac.
Zodiac's good.
I actually liked Gone Girl. I don't think everyone else did.
I like Social Network.
I really like Social Network. Social Network's probably my favorite. That's a good one. I did not care for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, or The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He did that one. Huh. Anyway, sorry, Sam.
No, you're all good. And my final fact for you today. In the original Fight Club DVD, there was a 1 second long message from Tyler, so that was kind of cool that they added that in. However, on the 10th anniversary Blu-ray, so the first Blu-ray, when you would put the Blu-ray in, the menu that appeared was Drew Barrymore's movie Never Been Kissed. Just like the screen of it.
That is so funny.
Just for like half a minute, and then it would turn to Fight Club. I thought that was great.
There were like more than one-star Amazon reviews talking about how they got sent the wrong movie, Never Been Kissed. I was like, that is a hilarious mix-up, but that's even better.
No, it's the right DVD. They just didn't wait long enough.
That's phenomenal.
Wow.
I would not wait at all. I'd be like, fuck, wrong movie, and just throw it out.
Burn it instantly.
Exactly. What, am I going to return it?
Cool. But do we have a question?
Yeah, do we have a quiz question?
Your question is going to come later in the episode when I think of one.
Perfect.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Okay,
nice,
so
purposeful structuring.
That was
bam. Time for Sam.
All right, let's go to our next segment, Critics Corner. We hear of the discerning folk of the critic world had to say about this film. I got to tell you, it was not critically acclaimed. I thought it would be.
Me too, actually.
I was very surprised. Anyway, I'll start. This is from David Anson of Newsweek. "An outrageous mixture of brilliant technique, puerile philosophizing, trenchant satire, and sensory overload. Fight Club is the most incendiary movie to come out of a Hollywood in a long time. It's a mess, but one worth fighting about."
Ha ha ha. Here's one from Fox, an Amazon reviewer. "Meh. I waited a long time to watch this movie. The entire movie turns out to be leftist propaganda led by a typical leftist psycho, the blueprint for Antifa." I'm glad he brought it up.
We're all thinking it.
"Don't waste your time with this one."
You know what I like about that review, though, is I think if you watch this movie and you're like an old dude who's really into Fox News, you would probably... This is probably what you imagine Antifa is. Exactly. Like super well-organized underground terrorist organization that just wants to fuck your shit up because capitalism. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I imagined Fight Club as like an incel fantasy.
Sure.
So it's not. It's
are
not
we
how
saying
I
different
feel.
Things?
Kinda. It's like it's a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Right. Oh, for the time when men were men and were encouraged to beat the tar out of one another. That's the world Fight Club pines for, says Jamie Bernard of
See,
the
that's
New York
a
Daily
professional
News.
Reviewer. I don't feel like they got the film. You know what I mean? I don't feel like they understood the message the film was going for.
It's possible.
Which is a negative for the film, even. And a negative for that reviewer. This was by Nathaniel, who's an Amazon reviewer. The movie is hands down the worst compilation of visual and mental brain-rotting garbage that I've ever seen in my life.
Whoa.
Damn.
Fight Club jettisons its sense of humor 60 minutes in, and so far from satirizing the tiresome quote-unquote crisis of masculinity stuff sloshing around the airwaves either side of the Atlantic, the film simply endorses it. Oh, sorry, I said that all wrong. So instead of satirizing the crisis of masculinity, they're endorsing it. I got it.
Yes,
says Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian.
True. Here we go. This one's from Mike. And I'm a Mike, so I can relate. Movie has bad subliminal messages throughout the whole movie. Basically, the movie is trying to dream people into being terrorists and then tell them to commit suicide. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's why I felt like that.
Go ahead. Don't post this review. I know you won't because it's too negative. Who is he talking
to? You don't know me, Mike.
But remember this. Woe to the man that stands in the way of Jesus.
Yes.
I lost me there. So that was Critics Corner.
All right, let's get into this shit.
Yeah.
Do you want to do favorite or least favorite first?
You know what? I want to do my favorite because I feel like the favorite is obvious for me. My favorite part is the twist ending. I don't know.
I think they did a really good job of that.
It's a really good twist ending, yeah.
And it's really fun to watch when you know the twist. And I'm like, I don't know. I just thought they did it really well.
Yes, I also agree with that. And I feel like the whole movie sort of built around the twist. It's a twist movie. It's a gimmicky movie.
For sure. I like gimmicks, though. I like David Fincher films. He's kind of a one-trick pony when it comes to his brooding cinematography and
What's
fun
the trick?
Camera tricks. What?
What's the trick? He's one trick. What's the trick?
I don't know. Orange?
Orange?
Isn't that his thing? Like, it's an orangey filter?
No. I mean, people credit David Fincher with, like, setting the style of cinema that other people try to copy like multiple times. So people did try to copy the visual kind of look of Fight Club, but then for Gone Girl it's a very different look, and for Social Network it's a pretty different look, but other films that came after that would try to copy David Fincher. So he's sort of he's known as kind of a pioneer of setting new styles.
I didn't know that.
The coloring in this film was actually supposed to be based off of if you were to go into a 7-Eleven at nighttime. Like kind of a hazy green kind of fog.
He likes colors, Michael. I was pretty close.
Yeah, orange was way off.
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I just really like the look of his films. I'm not a big cinematography person, but I really enjoy the look of all his films. I find them very immersive and interesting and not distracting in a way I don't. Like, it may be distracting, but in a way I like. I also just think Edward Norton and Brad Pitt do a really fucking good job. They both do very captivating performances.
I think Helen Bota Carter does a good job, too.
I think she looks like a fucking cartoon character.
Is that bad or good?
I don't know. I think she does the best she possibly could with the nonsense role she was given.
That's good. That's not different than what I said.
Also, I think her English accent comes out in one scene like real bad.
Oh, I don't remember.
It's the last scene she has with Edward Norton. But anyway, that's not important. Michael, what's your least favorite part? Because I got some things to say.
Well, I feel like you and I maybe have the same idea. So I'm particularly thinking of the scene where Brad Pitt and Edward Norton, they go to a convenience store and Brad Pitt's like, hold on, you go around back. I'm going to pull out an operation. And Edward Norton's like, oh, what are you doing? And then he takes, Brad Pitt goes in, takes the guy behind the cash register, takes him out to the back of the store, puts a gun to his head and says, I'm going to kill you unless you go accomplish your dreams right now. And then he does. And then Brad Pitt is like talking to the camera and he's like, that guy, he's going to have his life changed. He's going to wake up tomorrow and he's going to have the best breakfast he's ever had. And then the narration goes, you got to hand it to him. And then it's the next scene. And like, as an as an audience member, if you use your brain for 4 seconds, you're like, obviously, that's not a good idea for society. We shouldn't go around with guns and like take them behind bars and like threaten to shoot them to get their lives together.
Right. That dude is probably traumatized. He hasn't like, wow, life is amazing. I'm going to be a veterinarian.
But like, isn't my weird opinion. Like, obviously nobody thinks that this is actually a good idea. So that's why I want to say like the movie knows that this is what we're dealing with is toxic masculinity, that these group of men who like, oh, we got to rebel against the system, blah, blah, blah. And then they just turn into a terrorist unit. It's like, I even might say that the film is pretty non-subtle about the badness, but it's still too appealing, I think. I almost think what ruins it, call me crazy, is the twist. Because at the end of the movie, that's like, as an audience member, that's all you're thinking about. Like, man, that twist is so cool. Oh, he's that guy. That's like, really, when you leave the theater or when you stop watching the movie, that's what you come away with. Like, God, that twist, at least in your first viewing and maybe the second or third viewing, man, they did such a good job with that twist that you almost forget like what the point of anything was. And then after you think about the twist, you're thinking like, yeah, Brad Pitt was fucking cool when he had an underground fight club. So I feel like the message that they were really going for is lost with the gimmick.
Let me take it a bit further, because now that I'm watching it as a jaded adult who doesn't believe in anything, it's like, obviously this is fucking nonsense, right? Brad Pitt's persona. But I just can't totally get on board with the idea that it's obviously a parody of toxic masculinity.
I wouldn't say parody.
Or not, you know, commentary, as it were.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because when Brad Pitt, shirtless, awesome Brad Pitt, who doesn't care about anything, gets up and says things like, we don't have a world war, we don't have a Great Depression, but we need to be men. And he just says things that are like, I mean, of course, you and I, again, we're in our, I don't know how old you are. I'm in my 30s. That's
you
stupid.
You don't know my age?
You're around there. And and you're just like, and then the twist is what really gets me into this idea that there's kind of a lot of bro-y nonsense in this film, even if it is a satire of toxic masculinity. I don't know why I've never thought of this, but the crux of the film is that Edward Norton is a schizophrenic, narcoleptic guy who, in his sleepy other person state, is super cool and really good at sex and creates a super well-organized terrorist organization.
Yeah.
Like, that is such an ultimate bro fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's nonsense. It's really stupid. And I don't know why I never thought about how dumb that is.
It's hard. This film's hard to think about for me because, like, it is really stupid. And in the very end, when Edward Norton shoots himself in the head and is like, got rid of him. It's like so obviously stupid that you're like, okay, obviously the film, this is like metaphorical. But it's like,
I guess.
What is it saying?
So my other two least favorite parts are actually lesser than the bro nonsense part. So Marla, why is she there? I like Helena Bonham Carter, even though I think she just, who did she marry?
Tim Burton.
She looks like a Tim Burton cartoon character to me.
You're asking what her role in the film is?
Yeah, especially at the end when they're like holding hands. He's like, you met me at a weird time in my life.
So some people theorize that like you see a lot of Edward Norton and Brad Pitt and their relationship as regarding their communications with other men. And so with Marla, that's the element of like what it looks like, his sort of relationship with women. So
that's very helpful.
So
Michael,
like, especially,
thank you.
So some men will, when Marla comes into like the testicular cancer group seminar, and Edward Norton is like, dude, you're invading this space.
It's oh, man, that's I'm really coming around. That was very convincing. Thank you for that. But I think I've changed my mind.
Yeah, it's supposed to that, I don't know how good this movie is at really saying what it wants to say, but I think it
no,
is intentional.
And I guess I just there was it seemed like a weird crux that like Edward Norton's in love with her and that's a driver or a motive for him when they're so not close that she doesn't even notice that he's schizophrenic. But whatever.
I don't know. I like her. She's weird and I think she's funny.
She's actually very engaging on screen. And now I want to take it back as one of my least favorites. I was just a little annoyed with her sometimes. But here's my real least favorite part is when you and I have seen these kind of movies before where it sometimes feels like they put stuff in the script because they wrote it down on a napkin somewhere and like, yeah.
Yeah.
like that is so clever. It doesn't have anything to do with anything, but man. That is clever. Like when Edward Norton is like,
when deep space exploration ramps up, it'll be the corporations that name everything. The IBM Stellar Sphere, the Microsoft Galaxy, Planet Starbucks.
And I'm like, fuck off.
I don't know if I agree that it's not relevant or not like the other parts of the film.
No, but there's a lot of bits. I mean, I'm not saying they're out of nowhere.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that it feels okay. So what is this movie trying to say to you?
Well, that's a good question.
Because so we're kind of in the idea that, oh, it's actually that this kind of toxic masculinity that comes out of bored white men in this culture is bad.
Well, here's
but then yeah, it feels ahead. Like this movie is actually saying corporate culture is soul sucking and consumer culture is bad. But then what's the alternative? Like, what are they saying with that? So then it just feels like they want to say a bunch of quippy, cute things about your IKEA life. I don't feel like they're getting at anything other than they just had a bunch of fun observations that'll make stone 20-year-olds go like, dude, yeah.
I mean, they're really trying to get at something. And that's something I think is like, it's really hard for me to talk about. But like, when I watch this movie, there is a small 1% of my brain that's like, totally. I'm totally there. So right away, when they're in the parking lot and Brad Pitt, before they started the Fight Club, as they're starting it, Brad Pitt and Edward Norton, they walk out to the parking lot. Brad Pitt's like, hey, punch me right now. And Edward Norton's like, what are you talking about? He's like, punch me. How do you know yourself if you've never been in a fight? There is one small part of my brain that's like, yeah, totally. And that's dumb. That's not right. Obviously, the 99% of my brain is like, what does that even mean? Know yourself better if you're in a fight. But I feel like this movie is getting at something that young men relate to or young men feel, which is like, there is this, oh, I'm awesome, I'm powerful, I'm cool guy. And then they don't grow up to have that.
But you're fucking feminized because we're just all raised by women. Whatever the fuck that means.
Right. So it's like, I feel like this movie is saying something real, but it isn't actually saying anything about it.
The one I related to was when Edward Norton talks about buying a couch. It's like, and that's the only couch I'll ever have to buy, and then it's just done. And I'm like, I do relate to that. I fucking hate shopping for furniture. I love the idea of just, and now I have that couch.
And you didn't think, fine. What is this fucked up consumer culture that we live in? Like, why can't we fucking worship the plants?
I mean, of course our consumer culture is fucked up, but what is the movie saying about that?
Right.
It is fucked up. But if Brad Pitt's the bad guy, then does that mean we're actually on the side of consumer culture?
It's
or it's all bad? Like,
again, it's not like Brad Pitt is like an adult. He's like, all right, so I've really thought about this and here's what I'm saying. he's like, our answer is to fight and do like silly vandalism around town. It's like, okay, obviously that's not the real answer. So I don't know, man.
Would you have joined a fight club? Is this what this is coming to?
Hell no. I don't want to be touched in any way by a guy. I don't want anyone to put their hand on my face ever.
Dude, I just want a PSA. I don't want to tell you why, because it's depressing reasons why I know this, but fighting is really dangerous. And I know that sounds obvious. Okay.
Being in danger is dangerous.
Okay. I just bet a bunch of teenage boys watch this movie like, let's start a fight club. It's going to be awesome. Okay. If you don't know how to fight, you can seriously injure and possibly kill somebody if you don't know what you're doing. That, I mean, like fucking boxers with their protective gloves and headgear, they still die because like fighting is super dangerous. You can't just fight and then you have some bruises and you get to be intimidating at the office. That's not a thing. Shouldn't have fight clubs, guys.
Can I just say, I feel like we're being negative, but I do like this movie. Like, I also don't like it, but I also do. Because it is interesting.
I like this movie way more than my rant. Because it's a long movie, and I enjoyed watching it. When I got mad.
It's like, what is it even saying? But I feel like it's still saying a lot. And it's like, there are movies that are just bland because they're boring and nothing happens. And that's not this movie.
I think that's why I like this movie. It really is so different. And it really takes a chance on something, but it's still a watchable good product of a film, which is I think why it's so in the pop culture. Like, it's why it's don't talk about Fight Club is such a fucking cliche you want to kill yourself.
I think
like,
it's a movie you could really talk about, and that in itself to me is a compliment.
But again, a movie you can talk about that's watchable. It's not like Darren, what's his face, Mother. Like, it's not that shit.
Darren
it's like,
Aronofsky.
Oh, this is a fun, watchable movie that they tell jokes that I laugh at. But what about it?
Yeah, exactly. So,
all right,
let's
get into summary.
All right. You go first.
Okay. The movie begins with our narrator character, who I believe we never find out the name of, played by Edward Norton, who has a gun in his mouth. Held there by Tyler Durden, played by Brad Pitt. How'd our narrator get into this predicament? Let's find out together.
Isn't that like the joke bit people do? Like, they'll show an image and then they'll do like, record scratch. Now, how did I get in this situation? It's like the start of a movie.
Let me tell you.
Right. Our narrator, suffering from chronic insomnia, is attending support groups due to a terribly unhelpful doctor.
Okay. This scene drove me crazy. He goes in. He's like, I never sleep. Can you just give me some drugs? He's like, just like exercise. You need some natural sleep, which I don't believe would happen.
Some doctors are terrible.
Sure. But then he says, you should go to St. Mark's on Friday at 6 p.m. to a support group. Then you'd see pain. I'm like, that's a lot of weirdly specific information to give a patient.
But you take a left here, you take a right here. Now there's not parking on Saturday, so you're going to have to get a ticket.
Like, what?
That would be an example of some people with pain.
That specific thing. Like, what a weird piece of dialogue that was. Anyway, go on.
We'll have to sign up. All right. At his...
So the support group's not for insomnia.
But for diseases he doesn't have. Brain parasites, tuberculosis, and testicular cancer. At his testicular cancer support group, he meets a man with giant breasts named Bob and learns how to cry. That night he sleeps. So this is like right as the movie opens. So it is getting into its central theme of these men who feel like they've lost their masculinity, which is purely a psychological effect because they're like, oh, I have no balls. Now I can't have a family. And my wife left me.
When we meet Edward Norton then, and he's like going to these support groups and he's sleeping well, to me that says therapy works and he should just do that.
I think the movie is saying that.
Oh.
Remember, because he says, but then I met Marla and she ruined it all. As in Marla came in and then he stopped going to those groups.
Women fuck everything up.
Again, that's...
Because
yeah.
I can't make any decisions.
That's what the movie's saying, actually.
Yeah. Okay. So Marla Singer comes in, Helen Bonham Carter. She's a faker, a tourist. You know what, Michael? You totally brought me around, Marla. I love the scene where he goes to like say, like, I can't believe you're here. She's like, so you've rehearsed that, right? I saw you rehearsing it. How do you think this is going?
But it is also a funny scene because, like, even the movie knows Edward's not in the right. Like, they're both fakers. And yes. we're both on that. We're all on that wavelength.
Right. So they decide to divide up support groups so they don't have to see each other again.
Is this a real thing, you think, that people do?
What do you mean?
Go to therapy groups?
This is a very much a real thing, actually, that people do that.
Oh. On a business trip, our narrator meets Tyler Durden, a charming soap salesman. I feel like the first thing Tyler says is like, now here's how to make a bomb. And Edward Norton's like, oh, cool guy.
No, the first thing he says to him is like,
it's very clever. Thank you. How's that working out for you? What? Being clever?
And I'm like, I just love that line. And I don't know why. I just feel like people have said versions of that to me. I'm like, that's cool. That's a cool thing to say.
But also Brad has good delivery too.
He's really good in this. Also, it's not in the description, but Edward Norton's job is he's a liability guy for defects in cars, which, what did that have to do with anything? I feel like the author like found out that was a thing and wanted people to know about it.
I feel like if we thought about it, we could make some kind of connection.
Sure, probably.
When our narrator returns home, he has no home to return to. His apartment has exploded, either arson or some really flammable IKEA furniture.
I have to say one of the one-star reviews was like 8 paragraphs about how much this guy likes IKEA, and he felt like it was really unfair to the...
Oh, that's great.
Anyway.
He calls Tyler Durden and grabs a drink with him. Tyler agrees to let the narrator stay at his house. But first, he wants a favor. I want you to hit me as hard as you can. The two fight in the parking lot of Lou's Tavern and then go home to Tyler's dilapidated house on Paper Street.
Every night they go to the tavern and fight and other men join them. So walk me through this, Michael. What actually happens in the movie is Edward Norton is in a parking lot kicking his own ass.
Yeah.
And two guys go up to him kicking his own ass and go, hey, man, I want some of that.
You know what? I buy that.
Then a cult is born.
I mean, listen, Edward Norton in his other life he's just a natural born terrorist cell leader.
I'm convinced. So then Fight Club is born. Oh my God. There's a scene where they go on a bus. And this is another scene where I relate to Edward Norton, where sometimes you ask a question, like a fun question, just because you want to say your answer. Mm-hmm. And he goes to Brad Pitt like, so celebrity, what celebrity you want to fight? And he's like, oh, what? I don't know, dead or alive. And then he says Hemingway, and he's like, I would fight William Shatner. And then he just pauses, like, what a great answer that was. And then there's a line where Edward Norton's like, he and Brad are looking at this Calvin Klein ad, and it's like, these guys go to the gym just to look like that when they could be real men and get cut. And it's like, what am I fucking looking at with Brad Pitt here? He is just a fucking Calvin Klein model.
Knowing this movie, that could have been actually Brad Pitt. Do you know what I mean? And then David Fincher's
like, that would
have
been very funny.
David Fincher's like, I see what's going on.
Get it?
And we're like, David, no, I do not.
I don't. You have to spell it out for me. I'm very dumb.
I'm very dumb, David.
So one day the phone rings at their house. Paper Street House is what they call it. It's Marla. She's taken a bunch of sleeping pills and she's dying. Our narrator doesn't care. But Tyler picks up a phone, decides to go to her apartment. He brings her home. She tells him, you're going to have to keep me up all night. So they bang. And then she comes over a lot and they keep banging.
And are you ready for your question of the week?
Sure. Yay! Let's get a question.
At one point while they're banging, Brad Pitt is wearing a glove.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Uh-huh.
The same executive who did the quote bit that was like, you have changed the quote or the line, said that the glove was super offensive and crude. However, it got massive laughs at the test viewing, so they decided to keep it in. So your question of the week is whose idea was it to have the glove in the scene?
Brad Pitt. That's my guess.
Edward Norton. No, it was Halliburton Carter.
It was Brad Pitt.
Damn it.
Can you explain me the joke?
Yeah, I don't get it either.
There's no joke. He's just wearing a glove, and it's like the crazy stuff they're getting into, I guess. They had a lot of work to do on those sex scenes. Like, they started off by looking at all sorts of different porns to try and figure out poses, and then they realized that...
Did you say porns with an S?
You know, the pornographics?
Sure.
It's getting worse.
But they realized like all the positions were the same, so then they had to get into the Kama Sutra to find some original poses.
Jesus.
And yeah, Helena Bonham Carter basically was like, it was 3 days of just recording moans, and it was really exhausting.
All right, good question, Sam. Michael, I believe it's your turn.
When Marla finally beats it, what?
When she leaves,
Tyler takes our narrator to procure some fat or soap. Where do you get fat? The dumpsters behind the liposuction clinic, of course. They steal some grocery bags and Tyler's renders it down.
Gooey to soap. Bags.
What'd I say?
Grocery.
Can't read. While talking about how it can be used to make explosives.
See, like, does it feel like this tries too hard sometimes? Like, oh, we're selling rich women's fat asses right back to them. So, and then he kisses our narrator's hand and sprinkles lye on it, which causes a severe chemical burn, which was weird. That was a weird scene. It's all to help it hit rock bottom. And when Tyler assesses that our narrator's reached a new low, he douses the burn with vinegar.
Yeah, what's the point of that? That when you have pain, you should really, you gotta be present for your pain.
Guess.
We have any more, we're not really intellectual, are we?
Nah.
As Fight Club grows, Tyler starts assigning homework. The first assignment, to get into a fight with a stranger and lose. Our narrator chooses his boss and frames his boss into beating him up, which earns him hefty settlement check from his employer.
I gotta give a shout out to Mr. Norton here. That was a great, great physical acting, him beating himself up. I thought that was really well done.
It is fun watching this movie again when you know the twist and you know that, oh, it is actually Edward Norton just beating himself up. But during this scene, when the frame pauses and he goes, you know what? This reminds me with my first fight with Tyler. And then it continues. We're like, all right.
Except that when I watched it the first time, I didn't get that at all. I did not see the twist coming, I'm sure. Also, I feel like his boss is supposed to be like a bad guy. But yeah. It just seems like a normal guy doing his job. And who gave Edward Norton's character a lot of levity. He's like, because Edward Norton comes up like, we should talk. He's like, should we talk about you never showing up and you smoke in the office and you not dressing well?
Seems like he should have been fired before.
Right. Like, his boss was giving him a lot of, he's like, this guy's going through a tough time. I don't want to jump the gun. And it's like, maybe he's not such a bad guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Fight Club eventually morphs into Project Mayhem. The homework assignments become more destructive. They blow up coffee shops and computer stores. That's cute.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, they just do silly pranks when they, like, spray paint a smiley face on a building. And, like, we're dismantling capitalism. It's like, you're just doing cute bits.
That's so cute. Oh, then they threaten the police. And then they're working...
But can I just say, I watched this on HBO. The actual description of this Fight Club movie on HBO says, and then they form Project Mayhem, a group dedicated to dismantling capitalism. Like, that's just the end of what HBO says. It's like, HBO, I don't think you saw the film.
I believe this film is exclusive on HBO Max. I don't think you can get it on regular HBO. So that's a little plug for HBO Max, whatever the fuck that is.
That's good little HBO deet.
So yeah, they're working towards some top secret master plan, which our narrator is kept in the dark about. I kind of like it when Edward Norton's feelings get hurt. And he's like, why don't you tell me things? Yeah. He's like, what do you think we are, friends? It's like, aw.
Yeah.
So one night, Tyler purposely gets the narrator in a car accident. Again, it's one of these scenes where I'm like, these guys in the car are seeing Edward Norton just have a loud argument with himself. And they're like, good cult decision.
I mean, cults are crazy, man.
So Tyler disappears. The narrator tries to find him, and boy, does he. He discovers that he, in fact, are you ready for this, Michael?
What?
He's Tyler Durden.
Wait.
He and Tyler are the same person.
What? Whoa, what? Can I say, I'm going to spoil a movie you haven't seen, but you're going to never see it. There's a movie called Primal Fear, and in it, Edward Norton is like a farm boy who's, he's on trial for committing a crime. And it turns out he has a secret evil identity because he has two identities. And then there's the movie Hulk that Edward Norton stars in, where he has an evil identity. Where
what are you getting at, Michael?
He is the Hulk. And then there's this movie where he is an evil identity as Brad Pitt. It's just funny that you're typecast like that.
I think it's funny that in the universe, Edward Norton's film is part of it.
Is it
because
really?
They reference it. Isn't that weird? Like, can you imagine anyone who looks less like Edward Norton
than Mark Ruffalo?
Yes, thank you for remembering his name. Anyway, so Tyler, they're the same person. He realizes he knows Tyler's plan to blow up a bunch of credit card companies, if you blow up all the credit card companies, all the debt is erased. Is that true in 1999?
Maybe.
Can
I say another interesting fact?
Yes.
All the members of Project Mayhem have to have their hair cut off. They're all bald. And as you see Tyler throughout the film, he has less and less hair. And he is like shaved head in the end scene. And some people think in the opening of the film, when they're at support groups, the camera does focus on one of the support group members who is like a shaved headed woman. And it's like, people theorize that that's Tyler like appropriating the sufferer's look by having
dumb.
I thought that was cool. That's cool a bit.
Nope.
All right.
I feel like people are trying too hard to give it depth.
I mean, I think it's there. It's there.
Sure. So Project Mayhem has spread to a point all the building security guards are in Project Mayhem. So if Arnaria wants to stop the explosions, he'll have to do it himself.
He defuses one bomb and gets into a fight with Tyler, or himself, which leads us back to where we were at the very beginning. Tyler narrator holding a gun to his own head. Whew, what a trip.
The joke I laughed hardest at is when Edward Norton gets a gun and he starts shooting it. He's like, whoa, you are shooting at your imaginary friend in a room full of napalm.
I don't remember the line exactly, but as we cut back from the very beginning of the film to now, we were all caught up. Edward Norton says something and Brad Pitt goes, huh, flashback humor. But I don't remember exactly what he said. And I was like, that's clever.
Yeah, he said something like callback joke. he asked him like, I think he was putting the gun in his mouth. He's like, do you have anything to say for yourself? And he said, I still don't know. Yeah. Or I still have nothing to say. Why don't you read the last paragraph?
All right. In order to kill Tyler, our narrator shoots himself in the head. He somehow lives. But Tyler, who never existed in the first place, dies. Marla shows up, dragged to the building by Project Mayhem goons, and our narrator tells her, everything's going to be fine. You met me at a very strange time in my life. He takes her hand as the other buildings explode and fall around them.
And the Pixies' Where Is My Mind plays, which is pretty cool.
A picture of a penis flashes up on the screen to reinforce that these are phallic images. All the
Where
buildings
is my
crumbling.
Mind. I cannot believe that no one would die from all of the tall buildings in that city. What city is that? Is it a city? Probably not.
I mean, it's New York, right? It's all the credit card companies.
Actually, they didn't want to get sued by any credit card companies, so all the buildings are different Fox buildings that were displaced.
Yeah, I thought it looked more like LA or something just because it was so open. I also, this is that moment in the movie, especially when Tyler says the words Ground Zero, I'm like, wow, this is a pre-9/11 movie. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, should we call some people that we like and see what their
Here's
opinions
who I
are?
Really like our brother John. And we're going to call him with this segment called Bro Call.
I guess if we must.
Bring. I heard that.
Oh, it's John. Hey, John.
John,
hey, what's going on?
Have you seen Fight Club? What do you think about it?
Yeah, so I have. I think this movie is personally polarizing for me. So on the positive end, I really like movies that have a movie changing twist halfway through. And I do think this movie has a really good example of it. I mean, it's not Usual Suspects. Did get a reaction from that. So apparently you guys haven't seen it.
I've seen it.
Okay. Sorry. Cause that movie's amazing. But I really like it. I didn't put any effort into this thought, but I think this might be Brad Pitt's best acting role.
Have you seen 12 Monkeys? He was really good in that.
I really didn't like 12 Monkeys. So.
But he was really good in it, even if you don't like the film.
Yeah, I believe it. And Edward Norton is one of those actors that I just wish did more things that I liked because he's so good. Such a good actor. And yeah, I think he's really good in this. And I think the writing is good in this movie, too. But that takes us right to our negatives, because the philosophy of this movie, which is just stupid if you try to think about it for even 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Very, very skin deep, this movie. I say I like Edward Norton. Helena Bonham Carter is one of those actresses who I recognize is a good actress, but I just never like her in anything she's in. And that's
on me.
You didn't
like her in the King's Speech?
I didn't really. I just have this odd negative reaction to her. And I even see she's a good actress. I should like her. And I just never do.
Fair.
I just have this weird visceral reaction.
Because
I don't know,
you're like, why don't you hire fucking singers for Sweeney Todd Hollywood? I get it, John. I get it.
Actually, that could really be a piece because I really, really like Sweeney Todd, and that movie disappointed the hell out of me. Why? Where is our Angela Fletcher? Come on.
Let's get someone who can really sing. How about Johnny Depp? Can he sing? No. Oh, so someone will sing for it. No.
I can't believe you went there, but okay, well, way to go, Wells. You just knocked over so many things.
Wells is his cat. It's
oh, yeah, sorry.
Not just like a guy.
Yeah, that movie actually did scar me, and possibly is a reason I don't like her. And the one thing that really gets me about this movie is the practicality of this terrorist network is just utterly insane. How in the world did this happen at any level? Their plan makes what? I struggle with it from the word go, and you know, thinking about me and my approach to movies from the very beginning of Tyler Durden's Make a Terrorist Network, I was thinking about how this is going wrong.
Of course.
And it just bothers me all the way through. And yet, I still somewhat like the movie. I do.
Yeah.
Which I get. It's like supposed to be a male power trip. And, you know, this movie came out when I was in my 20s as a young male. So it's kind of tailored to me. So, yeah, it's not a movie I'd go out of my way to watch, but it's one I would enjoy watching.
What are you grade at, John?
I'm going to give it, that's a hard one. I'm going to give it a B-.
That's a fair grade, John.
And I was listening earlier because I came in right as you were talking about the practicality of their plan to blow up all the credit card companies. I was thinking, you know, if you in 99 pre like really connected internet, cause internet was just becoming a real commercial thing. You only need to reset a sufficient number of databases about credit for the entire credit system really to collapse on in itself.
I know that in 1999, they had the technology to make fucking copies. That's all I'm saying.
True. So, but you would only need to get a critical mass, like just a certain set of data.
Didn't they usually have data storage like offsite? Like they would their corporate headquarters.
Let me rephrase. Their actual plan was stupid, but the motive, like there was something there.
Sure.
The ability to hit the reset button by clearing enough credit data actually was plausible. It's not plausible anymore, but in 99, maybe. I've been thinking about that since you said that statement. But B-. Interesting.
Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Michael, what grade do you give the film?
I don't know, man. It's tough. I mean, well, here's the thing. You know me. What I like in a movie is friendships. And there's a friendship. They are pals.
But it kind of goes sideways.
Yeah.
It does kill him.
I don't know, man. Like, I watched this movie and I was into it the whole time.
It's hard. It's hard because some parts of this movie just kind of like make me mad and annoyed and make me feel old.
I think this movie does real harm even to this day. I think there are like far right groups that are kind of like, yeah, this is us.
I agree with you that a movie that's so effective at saying the thing it's not supposed to be saying. I also do like to kind of think of the AFI stuff, and I just do think it's like a super prevalent pop culture phenomena 20 years on, and that's something.
I'm going to give it a C-. I think the best thing in it is a gimmick, and that's fine, but you're not going to get high marks from me. It is enjoyable to watch, and there's a lot saying it, but I think it's negatives. Even in the short term, I can kind of just ignore it and have fun. If we're marking this grade down, we're etching it in stone, I might as well etch it lower, even if I might secretly feel it's a B or something.
I think I'm going to go C+.
All right.
Because I just did enjoy it. I think everybody in it is great. I think the creator did a good job. I do agree that there's really horrifying toxic elements there that even if the creator didn't intend it, it's there. And perhaps it's so successful because of that.
Yeah.
C. Now I'm etching in stone. C.
It's etched. Can't de-etch.
Just got a note. We are sponsored by IKEA this week.
Oh, if you buy a couch of theirs, that could be your last couch.
Forever. Never gonna have to get a couch again.
Was that enough for a joke?
You get fun accent pieces.
Sam, you just bought a bunch of IKEA furniture. Tell us all about it.
Yes, my boyfriend and I just bought a bunch of IKEA furniture for our house.
Yes, we all have boyfriends. Jesus, you don't have to brag about it.
Yes, it was very exciting.
Was it inexpensive? Was it high quality?
We were the cashier's biggest purchase that day.
Whoa.
That doesn't really say
anything. I really feel like the furniture reflects your personality. It's both practical and affordable.
Yeah, and it's a good team building exercise.
Did it give you any existential dread and want to start a underground fight club?
I guess you'll find out when you come to my fight club meeting.
Did you ever look at it and go, this is all just fucking stuff?
You know, I did start looking at the furniture, and then I was like, what is up with this feminized world? What is it coming to?
I look at it, and I'm like, ladies, we did it.
Plan Alpha commencing.
Michael, what are we watching next?
Did we decide? What?
I think if I do our little randomizer and go do, I think we're watching Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, fantastic film.
And I am not a singer, but I'm going to sing some fucking songs. So.
We're all singers in our hearts.
So that'll be a creepy mess. That'll be great.
Creepy mess. All right. Well, I look forward to the trailer for that wonderful film. And cut.
How does it make you feel to be the first golden ticket finder?
Henry!
Mike, the country wants to hear from you. The world is waiting.
Can't you shut up? I'm busy.
You're a rotten, mean father. You never give me anything I want. And I won't go to school till I have it.
Violet.
Call it, Mother.
Open it, Charlie. Let's see that golden ticket.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
It's not fair to raise his hopes.
Never mind. Go on, open it, Charlie. I want to see that gold.
Stop it, Dad.
I've got the same chance as anybody else, haven't I?
I never dreamed that I would climb over the moon in ecstasy, but nevertheless it's there that I'm shortly about to be. Cause I've got a golden ticket. I've got a golden chance to make my way. And with a golden ticket, it's a golden day.
I'm so glad you could come. This is going to be such an exciting day.
Little surprises around every corner, but nothing dangerous.
Don't be alone.
There's no earthly way of knowing
He's singing.
Which direction we are going.
another puzzle for you. Oompa, loompa, doompa-da-dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me. Who's